We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are back for another second show, that's involves a defensive lineman. Notre Dame fans, it is a big night. Notre Dame has just picked up a commitment from Boubacar Traore, a four-star top 100 defensive lineman from the state of Massachusetts. That is now the second four-star player from the state of Massachusetts. I got to say, Ryan, we were saying his name, Boubacar Traore, and I was like, you know what? I don't think that's right. Because it's actually a relatively popular name, mm-hmm. in heritage, and so there's like a soccer player with that name.
Yep.
Name. So apparently it's also pronounced like Traore. So I was getting ready to say that. Then I found them. Thank Tom Lemming, the Godfather, came through for me. There he posted a video after Boubacar committed, and it was him interviewing Boubacar, and the kid said his name, and it's Traore. Is how he pronounces it. So. I was like, cool, we're not screwing that one up.
You're right. Nice.
Jagasaw, right? So big commitment, Notre Dame. Al Washington has struck big now twice. And one in 2024, obviously that was Saturday when they got a commitment from Brandon Davis Swain. Now today he is on the board for the 2023 class. He kind of got handed these two gifts that are called Keon Keeley and Brendan Vernon. And now it's time to, you know, add to his supply, and he got that in Boubacar. This is a big pickup for Notre Dame, Ryan.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It's they are – we always speak to the versatility that Notre Dame wants to play up front between four-man, three-man. If you watch Boubacar and how he plays for his high school up there in Massachusetts, he is a edge the majority of the time. But what he always already brings, Brian, is 6'4", 250-plus pounds, is only a high school junior. He's got growth potential, and he's got length for days. I mean, we've been told it's upwards of 80 inches, which, I mean, that's a 6'8" reach for people that, you know, aren't, you know, understanding of like kind of converting there. So he's got a lot going for him. He's a really explosive kid. He's not the most flexible of all time. So there might be a transition eventually to like, hey, strong side defensive end. Maybe he's a three tech down the road. But either way, he's a versatile defensive end that brings a lot of power profile to the field.
It's interesting you say that about his flexibility, and we can just we'll dive in more into his breakdown here in a little bit. But the thing about that I noticed, Ryan, is I had some of those same questions about him. There's actually some clips on YouTube of him playing tight end, and you see it. So I think a lot of it has to do with the technical aspects, which we'll get into. But let's give a little bit of backstory on this one, Ryan. This is an interesting one. First of all, Boubacar is from he goes to high school at Catholic Memorial in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. He is listed at 6'4", 255. That's about right, I think. I think both of those look accurate to me. Incredibly long wingspan. I think we reported last time when we talked about him after he decommitted. I was told he has like an 80 inch wingspan,
right?
Which is absurd. I got to go try and find what Khalid Kareem's was, because Khalid had a really long one as well. And I think it was a little bit longer than that.
It was probably like 82, 83.
84. 84. Yeah, 84, yeah. Which is absurd.
Yes, it is.
So this kid has got some length to him. There's no question about it. So he is ranked as the number 83 player in the country, according to On3Sports. He's ranked number 88, according to 247 Sports. Both rank him as the number 11 overall defensive lineman in the class. Another, the third top 100 commitment for Notre Dame in this class, which is really, really impressive. Yep. So, and you're talking about that 80-inch wingspan comes from a kid who's just a junior in high school. It's going to keep growing. So mm-hmm. he fits to me in that Adi Toogoonba Ogundeji, Khalid Kareem mold of long, long athlete. So yep. This is also a young man who committed to Boston College in 2020, August of 2020. Stayed committed to BC for over a year. Decommitted back in March. Part of the reason he decommitted was interest from Notre Dame and Michigan. Excuse me. And I just think there was, I mean, some big time programs stepped up to the plate. He decommitted and Notre Dame was considered a top school initially. Michigan made a really hard charge for him. There mm-hmm. were some questions about whether or not Notre Dame could get a fifth defensive lineman in the class. If it was a case, where would he be? All that stuff was sort of part of that conversation, Ryan. And Michigan, according to some I talked to, felt that they were in a good place for him. That all changed yesterday when Boubacar visited Notre Dame's campus. And obviously, by the time that campus visit was over, Boubacar was a member of the Notre Dame recruiting class. So anytime you can beat Michigan for a kid, that's a positive. And it's continued, and it's been happening a lot here in this class. So that's what now two yeah, Michigan also obviously Brandon Davis Swain was the guy they wanted too. So you now have three top 100 offensive linemen in the class. You now have, I believe, seven defensive commits in the class, right? Three defensive linemen, two linebackers, and two DBs.
Yep.
This is the verge, Ryan, of being a really, really, really good class. And we'll get into that a little bit. Let's get into some film. Let's break down the film a little bit on him. You mentioned the length, obviously. He's got really strong hands. Very impressive natural power. Burst off the edge or burst off the line, I really like. His closing mm-hmm. speed, I really like. The questions that I have, Ryan, at first were sort of the lateral quickness. Okay, yep. I like the feet, but not laterally. When I saw the film of him playing tight end as a blocker and a runner, you see more elusiveness. And so I think a lot of that has to do with, in my opinion, when you look at that lack of agility or that lack of maybe not being top level in regards to the I think you said flexibility, right? I think some of that has to do with the technical aspects, because the one thing I notice about Boubacar right now, Ryan, is he's getting by on God-given ability. We're joined by Sean Davis is in the show with us too. Sean, thank you so much. We're reveling in beating Michigan for another top recruit. But when I look at him, Ryan, he's a really raw player fundamentally.
Right.
And so as I wrote in my Class Impact article, this is the kind of kid, a guy like Al Washington. Sean, I'm going to kick this over to you. This is the kind of kid that a guy like Al Washington is just drools over. Yeah. Because you're like, give me this 6'4", 255, powerful, long, good athlete type of kid that needs to be coached up. That's right in his wheelhouse. And it's what you want.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, that was one of the things we were happy about, right? There were some things spoken about Al Washington from people around the Ohio State situation with him coaching the linebackers that recruiting-wise, great. Teaching a position, the production kind of dropped off, and we were wondering what was going to happen when he came back to his more natural position of coaching the defensive line. And what we saw and the way they went about teaching the defensive line in the spring practices that we were able to watch was strictly about fundamentals and getting guys to believe in themselves. A guy like Tyson Ford, taking him under his wing, seeing that he's not being able to compete at his level early on in scrimmages, pulling him out. And as soon as he puts him back in, you see the competitive level go up based upon what he said and what he's taught in a brief session. So that goes to see that we already knew he could recruit, and we already knew that he would recruit a different type of athlete at the position than Mike Elston would say. Not to say that Mike Elston wouldn't like certain guys that also Al Washington would be looking at, but Al Washington would probably be more determined to go after the higher level guys with higher ceilings more so than a Mike Elston from a depth standpoint. I think Elston would go after maybe two or three per class, and Al Washington is definitely going after like five, six guys, and he's staying on top of them. And you're starting to see, when we talked about the recruitment of Swain, David Swain, and what made you recruit this week? What made you commit this weekend? Al Washington. What stood out about the visit? Al Washington. And it was like that simple for him. So you look at the work and the relationship he's building, which, Brian, we talked about this, is very important because the legacy of relationship at that position, mm-hmm. Mike Elston did a great job. Well,
yeah, and that's something we talked about in a show earlier today. Ryan and I were talking about this in an earlier show. Is it's not an accident that mm-hmm. Notre Dame, that Marcus Freeman signed. Sean, and I think you and I were talking about this on the phone earlier. It's not an accident that Marcus Freeman hired a bunch of coaches that are built on this. But yeah. Relationship is great from a recruiting standpoint, and I think that factored in, and it's from a trust standpoint. But at the end of the day, you got to teach these kids how to play the game.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that was encouraging from the spring because, you know, Ryan, you and I have talked about this before as well. Coaches don't really care a whole lot. Offensive line coaches a little bit more than others just because they're obsessed with technique. But coaches don't necessarily care a ton about, is this kid fundamentally sound?
Yeah.
That's like, if you're out of Washington, this is what I get coached to do. Give me the kid with the tools. And I think those are the things you see. And if the lateral quickness that we were talking about earlier maybe doesn't quite get there, I think the way that Notre Dame plays, I don't think hurts him as a big end. But when you look at this kid's frame, if he's 255 now, I don't know how much longer, you know, he may not be long for the big end position, but I do love the versatility that he brings. He could maybe be 270, 275 that can play big end and then also slide inside, or he may end up just keep growing and growing and growing and be a three technique. Now all of a sudden that lateral quickness doesn't really hurt him as much.
Yeah.
So I think the versatility piece, Ryan, is so important because when you got a guy coming from the NFL and Al Golden, he's not going to want you to just be able to play one spot. And I think that's something that Boubacar certainly brings to the table.
Yeah, and I mean, even if he is slightly tight, right? Like maybe he's not the most flexible rusher of all time. This is not a one-size-fits-all for flexibility, right? Like I don't expect him to be as flexible as a Viper because he's not going to be a Viper. He's going to be a strong side defensive end, or he's going to end up growing into an interior player. And when we kind of circumvent that flexibility on the interior, that's a completely different animal, right? Like he's a very flexible player for being an interior rusher. Now he's a flexible player for being a strong side defensive end. The key traits though here, Brian, are if you believe in your coaches and you believe that they can develop 6'4", 255 as a high school junior with an 80-inch wingspan. That's all I got to say. And explosiveness. He's not like right. This isn't like a bumbling, lumbering dude. Like this right. dude gets off the line of scrimmage and he is right. physical. There is right. natural power there.
Right.
Coach Bayless is going to have a nice time developing him in the weight room. And Coach Washington is going to have a lot of fun fine tuning those athletic gifts.
I want to address something else here too, fellas, because there's been a lot of understandable concern when looking at the players they're trying to get in this class. Boubacar being one, Brennan Vernon. They want Devin Houston. They want Jason Moore. They just got Brandon Davis Swain. And I had somebody ask, and I think it's a very fair question, there's really only one true edge guy in that group, and that's Keon Keeley. I think the thing that people have to understand is in this defense, there's really only one true edge position, and that's Viper. The big end is, it's not the same as Pete Carroll's defense in Cincinnati, but it's closer to that than the old school Mickey Andrews 4-3 at Florida State, where you've got two wide edge ends, right?
Right.
So that's what people have to understand. In a 4-2, that big end is not a edge player in the traditional sense. It's going to be a Khalid Kareem. It's going to be an Aditakumba Ogundiji. It's going to be a Myron Tungavaloa, which is why Ryan and I and Sean, we've all said, that's why we think Jason Moore can still play big end, even if he feels that. Why Brendan Vernon can stay at big end, and why Boubacar can stay at big end. But the manner in which they play big end also allows you to have some of those guys move inside, either A, full-time, or B, as part of packages. And we saw that in the blue-gold game. We saw Riley Mills and Alexander Ahrensberger both playing big end and both playing three technique in the same game. Mm-hmm. And together, sometimes Alex was outside, sometimes Riley was inside. So I want that to alleviate some of the concerns of, gee, they're recruiting a bunch of big guys, but not a lot of Vipers. Well, they have three Vipers in 2 years now because they got Josh Burnham. They got Josh Burnham, Aiden Gobira, and Keon Keeley. So that's three Vipers. They're good there. What Notre Dame wants and needs, guys, and Sean, I'll kick this to you because the one thing, like Mike Elson did a good job recruiting at Notre Dame. He did. I don't want to dismiss that. There was some inconsistency that I found problematic. But one thing that he liked that we're seeing start to show more in the younger classes, but also that you can see from Al Washington, is they needed more length. Notre Dame didn't have a lot of that on the current team. Let's be honest. Outside of, I mean, you've got some, there's some, you know, Jason Onye, there's some guys that have the length, but then there's a lot of Jacob Lacy's and Howard Crosses and Jason Adamulis who are really good players, but they're just not the same length. What Marcus Freeman has coveted from day one, and Ryan, you've hit on this a bunch, he wants length. And the nice thing that they've got so far, Boubacar is your shortest like guy, and Brennan Vernon is probably your guy with the least length of this group, this three-man group. That's absurd. When one of those two guys is your small guy or your guy that's not long, Sean, it's so important to have. I mean, look at the – Sean, you're an NFL guy, right? You follow the NFL. Ryan does the NFL draft. What are NFL teams looking for? It's not the next Aaron Donald because they know he's a unicorn.
Right.
Right. It's give me length. Give me length. Give me length.
And we saw how that length can play in because I think the length of the defensive line gave Drew Pine a lot of issues trying to find windows to throw. He couldn't see a lot of times in the spring game. So when you think about that, the length gives you better opportunity for your pass rush to disengage from the blocker, and then it gives you a better opportunity in the run game to hold that blocker at bay and then go make the play. So length matters, athleticism matters, and like you said, Marcus Freeman, since the day he's gotten here as the defensive coordinator, has made it his business to go after that on the defensive side of the ball. I think at all positions, not just up front, linebacker, back in,
corner, safety. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. That's been one of the mainstays that you can definitely see in the way he likes to recruit. And everyone else that's come onto the staff has followed suit. And Al Washington is doing the exact same thing. My question to you guys would be, is it easier to coach length? Brian, that's what I would be interested in knowing from a coaching standpoint. You coach length. Is that easier to coach?
Yes.
If you have athletic but not lengthy, and then athletic and lengthy, which one is easier to coach?
The long guy. And I think Aaron Donald's a perfect example that we brought him up earlier because Aaron Donald has to be an elite technician to be effective, right? I don't care how quick he is.
Right.
I don't care how powerful he is. If he doesn't have great technique, he's going to get engulfed. He's too small, and he doesn't. And guys are going to eat him up. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a guy like Quentin Nelson gets his body on a body and Aaron Donald's done. Right. Unless he has elite, obviously power is important, all that, but he has elite technique. So you can't engulf him. You can't get on his body. I think what a guy that's long does, Sean, is number one, it allows you to really do everything as a defensive line coach, right? It enhances your ability to block destruct, right? There's less that you have to do. I mean, you can come off the line. We saw this from Isaiah Foskey how many times last year. I mean, Khalid Kareem made a living doing this. Like, it's like whenever Khalid needed a big sack, he would do one of two things. He'd come off the line, he'd get his inside arm, and he'd just get in your chest, and you couldn't get your hands on him, and he would just drive you back into quarterback. Or he would come off, fake that move, you jab, and then he would do this and beat you. And it was just elite length. You just couldn't get on him. And so I personally think length is the thing that it's easier to coach a long guy because of the other part of it too. And Ryan, I don't know if you agree with this. I think a length also allows you to be more of a I'm trying to think of the correct way to say this. You can overcome mistakes a lot more effectively when you're long. If you're just kind of average length, we see this from offensive linemen all the time, Sean. If you just have kind of average length, and you make a mistake, you shoot your hands too early, too late, get them knocked off, you're done. Mm-hmm. You're done because you can't get that guy back off of you because he's longer than you. If you're longer and that guy gets off of me, as long as I got the power, I can kind of get back out on him. So I think the margin for error on a longer guy is a lot wider than it is for a shorter guy who just can't miss it. And that's what makes Aaron Donald unique. That's why you don't see teams like, hey, let me go find the next Aaron Donald. Because every coach with his grain of salt knows there is no next Aaron Donald, right? You don't look for guys like him. You just, when you find the guy that's like him, you love it, you embrace it and all that. But there's a reason he fell in the draft as far as he did because he was a freak at Pitt, But, you know, the length and all that caused him to drop, and it was a mistake. And I think Warren Sapp had some of those things too. People kind of over, not just the weed thing, but there was other, you know, maybe he's not the this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
But you don't look for an Aaron Donald. You look for a Stephon Tuitt, right?
Right.
And I think that's kind of, for me as a coach, you want that. And I think it's more so true on defense and offense. And you know, kind of back to Bubakar, but that's the thing. That's what makes him so good now. Is that length and the athleticism. Like Ryan talked about, you know, this isn't a plodding guy. This is a dude with some burst.
Yeah.
You know, but the reality is Ryan is he is able to make plays in high school because he's so long. Because those kids in Massachusetts can't get on him. And that's the impressive thing is he's as good as he is now. And his technique is really in its infancy stages. Cause I believe, if I remember correctly, I didn't watch his sophomore film recently. But I believe he began his high school career as a linebacker.
I think so too. Yeah.
So he's relatively new to the defensive line. So this isn't a shot on his high school coaches. They just won a state championship, right? They're good football coaches. It's more of the kid just started playing defensive line is more of the comment. So I expect his technique to get better before he gets to Notre Dame because he plays in a really good high school program. So I'm gonna make sure that people understand where I'm at. It's not a shot on his high school coaches. But that's the thing is, Ryan, is once the technique comes – like, here's what I'll say, and Ryan, you tell me if you agree or disagree with this. Mm-hmm. I would argue of the three kids in the class right now at defensive line, Keon Keeley, Brennan Vernon, and Bubakar, I would say right now he has the lowest floor because he has the most room that's needed for improvement. But I personally still gave him a five-star upside grade. I think this kid has a chance to be he has got a lot of Khalid Kareem to him, but I would say he's more explosive than Khalid was at the same age. In my opinion, what say you, Ryan? And then Sean, I want you to follow up on that as well.
Well, no, I mean, he's got massive upside because I think that he projects to a couple different positions. So that immediately gives me some imagination of like, hey, he can rush for multiple alignments. So at worst here, I mean, even though his floor isn't quite as high because he's not as developed. I think his floor is maybe even a little higher than that though, Brian, because he has ability to, I think, be a sub package rusher for multiple alignments. You know, I think that he has that potential. The other thing that length does, though, I just want to add this in real quick, and it's pertinent to Traore, is that if we're talking about a guy that might be an inside player long term, if you do not have length, if your body type is not that, you're going to have a trouble putting on weight. Like that is going to be a tough part of that situation. But like if you were long, long levers, 80-inch wingspan, 6'4", and you're already 255, that projection says you could probably hold 285. You could probably do it. That's the body type that you want. That's why, whether it's in NFL draft circles or in recruiting circles, body typing is a real thing. You're going to look at a player and you're going to imagine. I mean, I talked to the strength coach at the University of Northern Iowa, who has done that for a living, right? Like, they took the kid Spencer Brown, who started at right tackle for the Buffalo Bills, who came out a couple years ago. Brian, he came into the college. He was 6'8", 220 pounds. And they have a four-step process where they basically project out how much are you going to weigh based upon your body at the final step of this process. I'm looking at Traore, and I'm saying as a projector, this kid's a 285-pound strong side defensive end, interior defensive lineman, and that's kind of how you project that going forward. And the reason that he can project that way is because he's got that.
Right.
He's got those long legs. He's got those long arms. He has upside.
And that's why we have the concern about Emil Wagner, because he doesn't have those things, right? He doesn't have the broad shoulders and the wider hips. And the like, if you look at Boubacar's lower body, guys, he's a thick built kid. He's thicker than Emil Wagner is in the lower body. Right. So I think you're spot on, right, Ryan? He's either going to be a 275 to 285 pound big end, or he's going to be a bigger version of Jason Adamiola as a three technique. Right. And that's either way, it's a good pickup, Sean. And I think the other thing too is when you look at a guy like Boubacar, guys, we wrote, I can't remember which one of you wrote it. I don't know if it was Sean or Ryan, but we wrote early that this is a really rare year in Massachusetts. There's legitimately like four-star kids. There's legitimately like 3 to 4 top 100 caliber kids in the state of Massachusetts. You had to take advantage because it's a kid goes to Catholic Memorial, right? You had to take advantage of that. They've now landed two of those guys. They got Preston Zinter earlier, now getting Boubacar. And that's the thing that we're seeing from the staff so far is they're not really missing. And when they set their sights on a kid, they're getting it. And that includes beating a team in Michigan who had a D-line coach that had already established a relationship with Boubacar at Notre Dame. There's a greater need for a kid like Boubacar at Michigan, for being honest. And they're coming off a flipping playoff appearance. And yet Notre Dame is just absolutely destroying them on the recruiting trail right now, which just speaks volumes about it. And again, to be able to go into Massachusetts and get another big-time player out of the state is huge, because it's not going to happen very often. At least it may. I mean, maybe it becomes the next Arizona. I don't know, because of some of the private schools and, you know, maybe they get some kids from out of state or whatever. But for right now, I don't expect it. But when it happens, you take advantage. And Boubacar is just the latest in the line of it's a great year in the North. Notre Dame's got to take advantage. And so far, they're doing just that.
And another thing with this kid, you watch his film, the one thing you see is the impact with his hands when he makes contact. Like, I saw him drive a couple of tackles back, just like immediately he snapped their neck back on initial contact with his hands, which bodes very well, especially if he's going to be that big end. You make contact and do, like you said, what Khalid Kareem used to do. Get a guy, drive him back, and then as he builds his counters at Notre Dame with the coaching of Al Washington and the rest of the staff, he's definitely going to be a dangerous kid. And like Ryan pointed out, you know, his movement, you know, at that size, if he does get to 6'5", 285, and is it really 80 inches? Are we really talking about 80 inches as far as reach?
His wingspan.
That's
6'8", 6'8" wingspan for people out there. Yep.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. So you're getting that. There's no one more happier today than Al Washington.
Yeah.
And Al Golden sitting back saying, look at what we have to work.
Right. I want to say this too, Sean. This is Big Jim said this. Al Washington grinding steals kid from his alma mater. This is one of those ones where I kind of, you know, want to kind of ask yourself, like, you know, this is one where how much did Al Washington's experience, he coached for 5 years at Boston College and played at Boston College. Yeah. They're taking advantage of that to be able to dip into the state and get one of the top kids from one of the top programs in the country. And maybe it does build a pipeline, because there's a 2024 offensive lineman that you interviewed from this high school.
Yeah.
So Garrity Lambert, right?
Garrity Lambert. Yeah.
You know, so really, really big pickup. And then practically speaking, like I said, you can put him, Brennan Vernon, and Keon Keeley on the field together. I mean, that's the key. And, you know, it's a really, really big pickup. So let's kind of talk about sort of how he fit, what's next for this class. Okay. there's been a lot of discussion about, will they go four? Will they go five? You know, Sean, we talked about this in March when you guys came for practice and we sat down at dinner and we're talking like, here's the deal, right? I remember I just got off the phone and I was like, here's the deal, right? They're at four right now, but you got some people on campus that are pushing for five. And it sounds like the people that are pushing for five, and you know, one of them's like Washington is happy. But I believe that this move of getting Boubacar is evidence to me. There's two ways you can take it. One is they don't feel confident in where they are with Jason Moore. But based on my latest intel as of 2 days ago, that's not the case. Or it's the voices pushing for five are going to win. And that's what it sounds like this is. So you now have three defensive linemen in the class. Yeah. We expect Devin Houston to make his announcement, his decision, whatever that may be, here in the next week and a half, right? It's what we're expecting. And then you've got Jason Moore. And so what they're doing, here's what I find impressive, Sean. Now, it helped that he got here with two guys already in the class. Yeah. That helped. But they really haven't expanded the board. They offered the kid from Massachusetts or the kid from Texas and the kid from Maryland on one day, but they haven't really recruited either one of those guys hard. He's pulling a Harry Hiestand right now in that his board is small and he's just zeroing in on those guys, say, I'm just going to go get them. Yeah. You need to have a board of 50 people. I know who I want. I'm just going to go get them. And so far it's going really well because – you know, you've now got three top 100 commits in the class. I mean, this kid is ranked number 83 and 88, and he's the lowest ranked kid in the class as of right now of the defensive linemen.
It's a mindset we're not used to, Brian, and we kind of discussed this earlier today with Marcus Freeman and his staff, the mindset that they're bringing in recruiting to whereas, and this might sound crazy, but whatever number you want to give it because you've been around the program, there are only a certain amount of kids in the United States that are good enough to play at Notre Dame. Like, this is the standard. And we're pulling from this group. And Al Washington is saying, the standard we have in Notre Dame, there's a select few guys that I want to go after because they're the only ones that are really good enough to go at Notre Dame. And I'm going after them with a vengeance, and I'm going to get them. And settling is not even part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's a refreshing thing to hear and to sense coming from the way they're going about their business and recruiting because it's kind of a departure.
It's a big departure. And this is something that you and I are talking about earlier. The reality is like in the past, Brooks Barr would have already been in this class.
Yeah. Yeah. Solid kid.
Right? And good player. Good solid player. Borderline four-star kid, you know, we'd have been talking about his upside and all this stuff, right? It's not a knock on Brooks Barr. Elston goes to Michigan and takes him almost immediately.
Yeah.
Because that was the mindset. Like, look, he's a good football player. Like, you're not going to go down there and get this guy and that guy and the other guy. This staff is not accepting that.
No.
And they're not accepting, okay, this kid's committed to BC. Okay. We're Notre Dame, right? Like, so what? This kid's in Ohio State's backyard. Oh, okay. You know, and that's where the Marcus Freeman effect came in because it's not a coincidence that, you know, in Mike Elson's however many months working with Marcus Freeman, they get, you know, Keon Keeley and Tyson Ford and Aiden Gobira and Brennan Vernon.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big key is you've got to be willing to lose those battles, right? And I think that was an issue in the past is they weren't willing to lose those battles. And now it's like, okay, we're going to fight those battles because A, we think we're going to win, and B, because we know that's what it takes to get to that level. And this is the kind of guy. And I'll say this, I do think if Elson was at Notre Dame, this is a kid he would have continued to go after. Like, this would have been right up his wheelhouse, right? Like, Massachusetts kid, you know, committed to BC. I don't want to make it seem like, oh, there's no way they'd have got Boubacar if Mike Elson wasn't here. But I just think without Washington here, it was a no brainer. But it's that they're going to continue adding. They're not just going to say, "Hey, we're good, so let's go get some projectable kid," that kind of thing. It's, "Hey, we got these guys. Let's keep rocking and rolling." And that's the key. So, Devin Houston, Jason Moore, that's the board right now, folks. I mean, that's the board. It's they're going to try to close on both of them, and whether or not they're able to do that or not, we'll see. Yeah. But that's the plan. That's the plan. So,
yep. And now, I mean, now we have to start talking about, this is another top 100 defensive line recruit just in the 2023 class. And it could be four if Jason Moore ends up coming aboard. So,
right.
I mean, just absurd to think about, man. Just absolutely absurd.
Let's just say hypothetically they get Jason Moore and Devin Houston, which right now I feel really good about Devin Houston. Jason Moore, I'll feel better when he gets back on campus. Is that fair?
That's fair.
But let's just say they get him right now. Devin Houston would be your lowest ranked guy in that class.
And he's a top 250 kid, 200, yeah, depending on the service.
Yeah. I mean, I'm because there's a couple that I believe, and I would argue that by some of those people, he's underrated because that kid's a really good football player.
Agreed.
I think some of these services haven't updated their recruiting rankings lately. But he's ranked number 177 by 247 Sports, and he's ranked number 182 by ESPN. Rivals doesn't have him in the 250, and he's like 267. He's 190 on the 247 composite list. That would be your lowest ranked guy. Even if they don't get Jason Moore, they just get him. He's your fourth lowest guy out of four.
And he's your least athletic player. He might be the nose of the group. Yeah. And he plays defensive end.
He's least athletic. It's like, okay,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, but the kid's athletic. I mean, that's the thing. This kid can move.
Exactly.
And he provides a little bit of the beef. What's going to be interesting is of Brennan Vernon and Bubakar, which one outgrows Big End and which one stays. And if they get Jason Moore, it's the same conversation. So that's going to be something certainly to watch moving forward. So
I also don't think it's unlikely, Brian, that like maybe all of Moore, Vernon, and Houston outgrow strong side defensive end down the road, right? And then you're talking about a couple of years from now, you got Keon Keeley, you got Joshua Burnham, and I don't know. It's a possibility, I think.
I think what they would like is they would like for none of them to outgrow Big End, but for all of them to outgrow Big End. And here's what I mean by that. I think they would like to have the potential for all three of those guys to be able to play two spots. That's what I think they want. And again, when you understand the nature of that position, you understand how it is practical, right? I mean, it's possible to do that. And sorry, Ryan, I just saw this response you just put in the chat. So I think that's ideally what Al Golden is looking for, what Al Washington is looking for, what I think Coach Freeman is looking for. It's because it's the same thing with Tyson Ford, right? Like, is Tyson Ford a big end or a three technique? And my answer is yes. Is Brennan Vernon a big end or a three technique? How about Jason Moore? Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. Yes. Like, no, you didn't hear the question. Is he a big end or a three technique? Look, no, I heard you the first time. My answer is yes. I think that's what they're looking for. And that's how you can line up and you know, because we talk about receivers, right? You know, you want to have receivers that, you know, Ryan, we talked about this show today. If you have like Styles, you know, Styles is a W on plays, Z the next plays. Why can't you do that on defense? Right. And what the NFL is showing is that you can. I mean, I don't watch a lot of NFL, but I remember there's one, I forget which game it was in the playoffs. I was watching, I was like, do they have four defensive end on the field? Like, I think they have four defensive ends on the field. Or there was one, I think it was the Chiefs. I was like, do they only have two defensive linemen on the field like right now? Like, is that what I'm looking at right this second? And that's the mentality of, hey, look, if we're attacking, if we're about athleticism and length, I don't need – and this is where some fans need to kind of get out of their minds the old school of you need your traditional nose. Mm-hmm. You know, you need your 300-pounders. Give me a bunch of 285-pounders that are long, twitchy, and powerful with powerful hands, and I'm going to have a phenomenal defensive line. And that's what Notre Dame's going for, because now on this particular series, I'm going to have Brennan Vernon running nose. I'm going to have Jason Moore as my three technique, and Bubakar is going to be my big end. The next series I'm coming out, and I got Brennan Vernon at big end, and I got Devin Houston at nose. I mean, you mix them all around, and you can even do that within a series. And I think that's the real – and then if you got a guy like, you know, a Keon Keeley or a Josh Burnham, there's all types of different things you can do. You can go with a – with those three kids, you can go with basically an odd front and just flip which side you want to put Keon Keeley at, you know, and do some different games with them there. So I think that's what they're looking to do. I don't know that for a fact, but when I look at the kids they recruited last year, Tyson Ford, Aiden Gobira, I look at the kids they're recruiting this year, and then I look at the fact they've already got Brandon Davis Swain. He's the exact same kind of kid that we just talked about. Yeah. He's exactly like Bubakar and Brennan and Jason Moore in that he's long. He's got great hands. He's probably the most fluid of all of them athletically. He's a really smooth athlete, mm-hmm. at least at that same age. But they're all similar players. You're like, well, how are you going to play all those guys? Well, it's because the way the defense is going to be run. Right. And like that's what Texas A&M is going to have to figure out how to do. Because the way Texas A&M ran their defense, they have like two interior guys and two edge guys, and it's a different kind of defense, right? Mm-hmm. This one is a little bit different, and I'm very curious how it's going to play out. But that's what I think they're doing. That's just my opinion. But that's what I think that they're doing.
I actually like the versatility because when you have guys like this that are interchangeable and can play multiple positions, you can pick and choose where you want to attack the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like what Alabama does with Will Anderson. Like it comes to a third down and Will Anderson chooses which guy on the offensive line he wants to attack. Like he'll go inside or he'll come from the edge. And when you have a guy like that, and you have versatility. That's a weapon that a lot of teams don't have, the versatility to mix match on the defensive line when it comes to a third and long or a second and long passing situation to go ahead and do what you say they do in the NFL, which is four defensive linemen or four defensive ends, which was the attack that the Giants used against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like they went to a lot of 4D and look, especially in passing situations, and it gave that offensive line issues because they were able to attack I guess the holes in that offensive line or the weakest link in that offensive line. When you can have that versatility, you can have guys that can do both and play multiple positions along the line. It's definitely something that gives you an advantage.
And it's the movement too, right? I mean, what do offensive linemen hate to do, especially interior offensive linemen? They hate to move laterally. it's just the thing. I mean, you're literally going to have these guys line up in multiple techniques and there's going to be movement everywhere. And even this year, I expect a lot of movement up front for just what the team has now. And then Maris Loifal's blitzing A or B gap. And then that's kind of how you manufacture pressure a little bit too. So a lot of possibilities.
Well, and then moving forward, you're talking about Jalen Snead and Nolan Ziegler and Junior Tuilamaka and Drake Bowen and Preston Zinner. So length and speed, right? Length, speed, athleticism. That's what they want. And I think Bubakar adds that. There's no doubt about it. Here's an interesting question before we kind of get to some questions here, guys. This is a comment that Sid Irish made. And when Sid Irish is coming at you with positivity, you know things are going well. Sid, I'm just kidding with you. He says, best D-line class since Lynch, Williams, and Tuitt. I'm going to say not just yet.
Not just yet.
And the reason I'm going to say that is because the 2016 D-line class had five dudes that are in the NFL right now. And I would say this one has a little bit more high upside, obviously with Keon Keeley, but that one had legit NFL guys, right? You had Khalid Kareem, Dalen Hayes, Julian Aguara, Adi Tukumba Ogundeji, and then Jameer Jones ended up being a defensive lineman as well. So I'm not quite ready to definitively say this is the best one. I think when they add one more, then it becomes that. I think if they add one of Houston or Moore, it becomes that. And I'll go this far. If they add Jason Moore and Devin Houston, it will be better than the 2011 class. And here's why. That 2011 class, and here's why they only need to add one more to be better than 2016. The problem with the 2016 class, it was all ends. They didn't sign a single interior guy. The problem with the 2011 class is they signed some interior guys. It was like Tony Springman and Brad Carrico, who ended up, I think, being kind of an offensive line type of guy. So you had great edge players, not so good inside. What would make this group special is you are dominant up the middle and on the edge. And I think that's why I think it has a chance to be. So, Sid, I like where your head's at, but I'm not quite ready to go there just yet because it's an incomplete class to the point in time. They need a fourth guy. But if they get that fourth guy, they surpass 2016 because they'll have just as much depth, higher floors, and the best player of the two groups will be in this class, Keon Keeley. If they get Moore and Houston, then it surpasses, in my opinion, the 2011 class, which up to this point in time is still the best class because we often forget, like it had Eshak, it had Aaron Lynch, it had Stephon Tuitt, it also had Anthony Rabassa, who was a pretty good football player, and then Ben Council was being recruited to play linebacker, but he was one of the, that was in a 3-4 defense where he was, it's kind of like a defensive lineman. You had Tony Springman in that class as well, who ended up being a key rotation player in the 2012 defense. So That's still the best one to the moment, but this class has a chance to surpass that, which is saying something.
I think the promise of establishing the pipeline, if you remember, because that was huge. Like, what? Mm-hmm. We got a kid like that from Florida? What? We got a kid like that from Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. We got a kid like that from New Jersey or New York? Right. Like, when you talked about those three guys, you thought that would open up the pipeline to those specific areas
and it
to
didn't.
Get more talent, and it didn't.
No, they didn't. They didn't follow through on it. They didn't take it. I mean, because like you had a decent D line class next year. It was good talent wise, but it came up short in numbers. You had like Jerron Jones and Sheldon Day and Romeo Okwara, which was pretty good. But then it was like 2014. That was the 2012. Then 2013, they came up short in numbers. They got Isaac Rocheau, who was a good player, but I think the only other guy they got was like Jacob Matuska because they lost Eddie Vanderdoes. He came up short in numbers. You know, then 2014, you signed a bunch of dudes, Pete Mokwa and Johnny Williams and, you know, Grant Blankenship, took a lot of numbers. It just didn't make a lot of sense. 2015, again, you know, you're getting some good players, but not the depth. And, you know, that's the key is you got to string it together consistently. And that's what I'm excited about because, you know, since Marcus Freeman has arrived at Notre Dame, they've gotten Tyson Ford, Aiden Gobira, Donovan Heinisch, and then obviously the three kids in the class. You got to string it back to back to back. And this is what, you know, we are talking about. I think it was today's show, Ryan. They all bleed together. We're talking about, you know, like if you get this great class, it's a gap closing class, but it's not a gap erasing class because in my opinion, just defensive line wise, because in my opinion, Alabama can have a class that can match that maybe. But even if they don't, the difference is Bama does it every year. Georgia does it every year. That's going to be the key. But this would make 2 years in a row you've landed dudes because Tyson Ford and Aiden Gobira are dudes. And then you're already off to a good start in 2024 because you got Brandon Davis-Swain, who's a top 100 player. So that's going to be the key, and that's what the hope is that Al Washington, however long he's here, can just open up that juggernaut, right, Sean, to your point, where it then becomes you want to be a top draft pick in the NFL as a defensive lineman, go to Notre Dame. Because look what they're doing. And they've produced a lot of NFL guys. And we can't dismiss the fact that what Elson proved from you can sell. It's like what Jeff Quinn did. When Jeff Quinn was at Notre Dame, he sold the O-line new tradition, even though he didn't build it. He had no part in building it. But you can sell it. What Al Washington can also sell is the Okwaras, the Kareems, the Hayeses, the Ogundiji's, the Tillers, like he played a big role in that. We can't dismiss that. Like Keith Gilmore recruited that class, but Mike Elson coached it. And so that helps Al Washington too, plus his ability, his talent, his ability to build relationships, the trust he can build, and his own track record, because he can go into Massachusetts and be like, hey, do y'all remember the last time I was coaching D-line? It was right down the street. Do you remember what we did? There's this cat named Harold Landry, had 22 and a half tackles for loss and 16 and a half sacks that year. And we had another guy named Zach Allen, Ryan, which last time I checked, that guy's pretty good too.
Decent player.
You know, and so he can show that. So it's really kind of come together. And then, of course, just, you know, with Marcus Freeman and all that. So it's, man, it's like I said the other day in that Intel piece, guys, I keep trying to find bad news so we can balance it and not come across as like a fanboy site. But I'm still looking, right? I'm still searching. Because right now, it's like when they say, hey, we want that guy, they go and get. I mean, with the exception of, you know, I'd say the exception, Sean, it was you and I talking about this. The exception of Carnell Tate, right now, I still don't know of a top target on the board that's just gone. Justin Rhett and Carnell Tate, that's it. I mean, Caleb Downs is on the board. Jaden Osbury's on the board. Samuel Pemba's on the board. Like, all their top targets are still on the board. Samson Okunlola is still on the board, even though we don't think they're going to get him, but they're still going to end up with one of the best O-line classes in the country, most likely. So it has really been impressive to see what the staff has been able to do. And they're now back to number one in the recruiting rankings. They've surpassed the monstrous class that Texas Tech is putting together.
Oh, they're better than Texas Tech now. Wow.
Yeah, with That's 11. Incredible. Yeah, they passed them. Yeah. Well, in the point system, picking up your sarcasm, didn't pick it up at first. But they are officially ranked number one on Rivals now, and they were already ranked number one on 247 Composite, and now they're ranked number one on the 247 Composite by an even greater degree. I'm actually curious what 247's team rankings are just for their rankings, because that's the thing that – I will say this. That's the thing that drives me nuts about 247 is when they give a kid's ranking, they give the composite ranking, not their own, which – drives me nuts. Yeah, they're still trailing old Texas Tech on the 247 by 1.39 points.
You got to watch out for those Red Raiders, man.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. They are putting together a nice class, though.
For Texas Tech? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
For Texas Tech. Yeah, that new staff is doing a really nice job there. All right, guys. So, commitment number 11, Boubacar Traore. Notre Dame's on the verge of something special on the defensive line. Now it's about what's next, right? And that's the key. And we broke it down already. But, man, it's fun to see what they're doing. It's also fun to see that you know there's more coming down the pike. I mean, top of my head, at least three. We expect at least three big announcements in May. You know, could be more. You know, this when I did my 5.5 for the month, I didn't have Boubacar and Brandon Davis Swain on my list. You know what I mean? And that's the impressive thing about it. So it's been a lot of fun. So, Sean, I know you got to run here. I think, are you guys doing a show tonight?
Yeah, we got a show at about 7:05. We're going to be focusing on some of the things that were said from the coaching staff during the spring game.
So. Did you guys learn how to read lips? Because, like, the sound kind of broke up every 2 seconds. Listen to that garbage peacock feed.
That's that peacock feed.
Oh, my God.
We still were able to get some good stuff from Marcus Freeman. So
that is so – they should Notre Dame should say, we are never doing another game with you until you can fix – because the quality of the video was crap. The audio was crap. It just sucked. And it wasted what I thought was a good analysis from Ryan Harrison, the guy that did play-by-play. I have no clue who he is, but I thought he did a decent job.
Yeah.
So anyway, Sean, any parting thoughts here before you get out of here?
I would say what we anticipated April to be for Notre Dame is probably just pushed back to May.
Yeah, because that's like, one of the things we had talked about, Sean, was it's not just about landing kids in April. It's setting yourself up for future success in June. Like we talked about, you're not going to get Caleb Downs in April.
No.
But if you can have a good enough visit with him, then maybe you can get him to come back and close on him in January or June. Yeah. And that's going to be a big thing. So April's been very successful. Maybe not the numbers we thought because some guys have pushed their commitments back, but there's still guys we expect to commit to Notre Dame. And it's been big.
And I'll leave you guys to talk about this, the word numbers. I think there are some guys that are about to start feeling the pressure of the numbers game. That have offers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I think some guys are about to see some things happen and like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I shouldn't hold this out until August.
Right.
So
all I'll say is, Sean, I like this aisle that they're shopping down, you know. It's really delightful, my aisle.
Yes. Absolutely, man. Fantastic.
This is like the steak seafood aisle happening right now, man. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Joseph Wright nailed it. A recruiting wave is coming. I can feel it. Joseph, I would say it's already here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's already started, but yeah, it's, and look, let's be honest. Every conversation goes back to what, guys? Every recruiting conversation. And whenever 2023 comes around, it goes back to what guy?
What was the question? Say it one more time.
The head guy.
No. Whenever, like, we're talking about recruits. Whenever we talk recruiting, where does it always turn?
Dante Moore.
Dante. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. You said
you got to know the staff is like, hey, man, do you see what we're building for you?
Yeah.
Right.
No one's going to score on us, Dante. Right. what we're doing. Right. Just signed one of the three or four best defensive classes in the entire country in 2022.
Right.
And the 2023 staff is like, okay, you think that was good? You know, wait till you see what we got planned next. And that's the key, right? It's about trying to outdo yourself every year. That's what great recruiting staffs do. Hey, we had the number one class in the country, but let's make it even better next year. Hey, we had the number three class in the country. We're not satisfied. We want number one next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really, really big one. So certainly a big, big, big pickup for Notre Dame. Sean, thanks for joining us. Enjoy your show tonight. We're going to go through a Q&A here now, folks. And so we're going to answer some questions about this pickup and some other recruiting things here. So, Ryan, let's just start at the top. As Adam Ziliak says, this doesn't affect the – talking about the Boubacar Traore commitment, this doesn't affect the recruitment of Jason Moore, does it?
No, it does not. It does not. The internal debate at one point was, can we take five or is four the number? They are now set that five is the number, obviously, because Traore would have been the fifth in that hypothetical situation. This does not affect Jason Moore at all. Jason Moore will always be a take for Notre Dame. There is no question.
Yeah. And the next question is along the same lines. Does this affect Devin Houston at all? I'm sure Jason Moore is still a take. He is correct about Jason Moore being a take, and the same answer is true there. No. Notre Dame loves Devin Houston. Loves Devin Houston. So, as we said earlier, we expect – well, actually, I shouldn't say it's said earlier because this was said after Steve had already posed the question, now that I'm looking at the time. We expect Devin Houston's recruitment to end somewhat soon, and we like where Notre Dame is in his recruitment right now. And he is still a take, no question. And again, what this is a reflection of, guys, is as we – because some people jump on later, but it's a reflection of more of, hey, they're going to be able to take all five now. And so now it's like you don't have to play the games. You don't have to play the, well, let's push this kid back and let's do this and let's do the other thing. It's like, hey, let's take five. And I think that's a really big piece to this whole thing.
Yep.
Matt D with a comment. He says, Al Washington is definitely taking what Elson had done to a whole new level.
Agreed.
It's a good start. But let's not forget the two dudes that were already in the class were
Elston.
Mike right. Elston.
Right, right.
Right. So I think it's going to continue. But what I don't want to do is, because he left for Michigan, I didn't like that decision. I hate Michigan, right? But let's not pretend like Mike Elston wasn't a guy we constantly praised before he left. Right? And was he perfect?
Very good coach.
Do I think Al Washington is going to be better than him? Yes. But he didn't leave the cupboard dry, right? We think Al Washington is going to coach one of the best defensive lines in the country next year.
Mm-hmm.
None of the guys on that line are guys he recruited, unless you want to count the Harvard transfer, Chris Smith, right? So I think Al Washington is going to take Matt's comment, I think he's going to take it to a whole new level. And I know that Matt, the reason I'm saying that to Matt's comment is because I know Matt's feelings on Mike Elson, and I know that Matt knows that Coach Elson has did a really good job. And so what Matt's saying is it's going to go to another level. And I think he's right. I think that's going to be a key. All right. Ashley Hill. I love this comment from Ashley. I had to get it up. He goes, Oh wow. They messed up and let a person who cares have the keys to Notre Dame. In turn, he got more coaches who care about their education and future and its importance. Freeman will need protection. There's a lot. I've said this, Ryan, you know, I've said this for a long time. And I said this, there was a lot of people that wanted no part of Marcus Freeman being the head coach of Notre Dame. There's a lot of coaches around the country. And I've been told this before he took over. I was told this before last season after he was hired. Ryan, you remember, I think I told you this. And I think I've said this on the site too. I was told by a Power Five coach whose team has been in the playoff that nobody wants Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame as far as out, nobody, because they know how little they saw Brian Kelly on the trail. They know how little they saw some of Notre Dame. They knew that once we got involved, we knew Notre Dame was going to bow out.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it was. There was like maybe two coaches. There's three coaches in the last 10 years who four that wouldn't bow out. Dembrock never stepped back down from a fight. Mike Elko never backed down from a fight. Chip Long never backed down from a fight. And Harry Hiestand said, I'll get whatever offensive lineman I want. I don't care who's from. Outside of that, yeah, a lot of coaches have backed down. And a lot of it, not always, but a lot of instances. And so, yeah, this staff is willing to fight. And that's what people are afraid of. And that's what we talked about in an earlier show. And the product is so much better now. Better on-field product, better facilities, all the upgrades. You know, so I said Notre Dame's a sleeping giant. And this is why I was always so hard on the previous coach and the previous staff of, well, they're getting top 10 classes every year and they're going to, yeah, but they should be better.
And right.
This staff is showing it, Ryan.
Well, and if anything, well, not if anything, Marcus Freeman is a different thinker than what has been at Notre Dame at the top of the class. He has changed the ideology of how we are going to attack recruiting. Who are we going to target? What type of player and what type of person can succeed at Notre Dame? And he came and, I mean, it's a culture shock to a degree, right? Because, like, you're used to what Notre Dame had done, and then someone immediately comes in, and it's different. He presents himself different. He presents the program different. He thinks differently. And that is what is the biggest change. It's not that Notre Dame is more attractive in a vacuum, right? Like, it's still the Notre Dame, the aura that everyone is used to, the historic program, the great education. None of that has changed. The difference is that there's a person calling the shots at the top who is not afraid of competition, who understands that I need to identify great football players who can succeed here. It's just different. And the difference is, again, not that he changed some things around. So now he could target this player and target that player. The academics is less of an issue than it's ever been. Every standard that Notre Dame has stood for is still intact. It's just now that there's somebody at the top that is willing to look past the hurdles, the different aisles, all those perceived handicaps, and say, I'm going to compete with them. Alabama, yeah. Ohio State, Michigan, whoever, it doesn't matter. That's what we're seeing right now, in my opinion.
Right. And Anthony Solomon said, Brian, I remember when you said college coaches were hoping Marcus Freeman would not get the Notre Dame job because of his recruiting prowess. Checkmate. And this is exactly what they were afraid of. This is exactly what they were afraid of. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Marcus Freeman. It's Marcus Freeman. It's Tommy Reese. It's Chancey Stuckey. It's Harry Heastand. I mean, that's the thing. It's the staff. And as we were talking about on earlier show, you know, it's one of those things where you're not, it's not just ever one guy anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not just Harry Heastand. It's Harry Heastand and Chad Bowden and Marcus Freeman and Tommy Reese. It's not just Al Washington for D Lyman. It's Al Washington, Marcus Freeman, Chad Bowden, Al Golden. They're all involved. And that's why they're able to have the success that they're having.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a really impressive thing. Connor Patton with a super chat. Says, couldn't be more excited for the class of 2023. Thanks for the quality coverage, Connor. Thank you very, 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 very much. We appreciate it. And hey, you know what? Actually, Connor, I believe that this young man is not too far from where you live. I believe you're now in New Hampshire, Vermont, one of those two. So you may have to get down to a game here at some point in time. Evan Gaddy says, Brian, Ryan, Sean, I met y'all on Saturday at the Irish Breakdown tailgate. It was great meeting you, Evan. It was a lot. That was a fun day. A lot of fun for that.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Kish Squared says, I know that Notre Dame still wants Houston, but does Houston see four top 100 guys as too much competition? Nope.
I don't think, because the thing about Houston is that he projects a little closer to a true nose in this system than if a Jason Moore ends up inside, if a Brandon Vernon ends up inside, if a Boubacar Traore ends up inside, they're more three tech types, right? Houston is probably going to be a three tech to nose in this system. So he projects just a little bit differently. So in that respect, the guys aren't going to be clogging his ability to play the nose position, right? Because there's just not anybody that really projects the favorably to that position. So he's a little bit of a different animal as far as his style.
Right. There was another question that I accidentally unstarted. And so I'm trying to find it, but somebody asked, if you get Boubacar, Devin, and Jason to go with Keon and Brennan Vernon, did you go 5 for 5 for top targets? I mean, there were some other guys on the board early that they liked David Hicks early. You know, there was guys on the board, but as far as the guys they zeroed in on, pretty close to batting 1,000. You know, again, there's some guys that they liked. I mean, if David Hicks was more interested, they probably would have made a push for him as well. He's a highly ranked guy, although he's a good player. I don't see 5-star with him like some people have, but still really, really good football player. But I mean, basically if you look at it and say, okay, was this their top 5 guys? I don't know if I'd say that, but what I would say, Ryan, is that the way that we've explained how it really works is there's a group of guys that you say, those are the guys we really want. We want to fill the class from guys from that group. And all 5 of these kids, if they're able to get them. Well, so far, all 3 of the kids they've landed are definitely in that group. And Jason Moore, Devin Houston, who are the guys left on the board, if they were to get them, are also guys from that group.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, they're getting A group guys. And I hate saying A group because here it is from Kamikaze Fullback. This is the one I was referring to. Did they go pretty much 5 for 5 on their targets? And so that kind of answers that. And Sid Irish says, Keeley, Traore, Moore, Houston, Vernon, best D-line in the country. Ryan, I think you'd have a hard time convincing me there's a combination of 5 that could be better than that. Because you've got in that group right there, you've got three, at least three top 50 players, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In Keeley, yeah. Jason Moore, and Brennan Vernon. You have another top 100 kid in Traore, and then you've got a top 150 kid in Devin Houston, who I really like Devin Houston, especially as a nose, because he fills his need is arguably the biggest need fill in the class. You could argue.
Yep.
So I mean, it'd be hard for anyone to kind of tap that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, unless Texas A&M grabs seven defensive linemen again, like
but again, but if all these five kids stay in the class, it's like
they can play together.
Is there enough highly ranked five that you could be better than this? Is there a five that you could go by?
No,
it'd be hard. It'd be hard. I love this comment from Michael Parks. He was Al Washington went full Texas A&M.
Love it.
And I don't know how he did that because Notre Dame's not offering guarantees. So, you know, I don't know how you're able to put together that class in this era of NIL, because kids are – every single good player in the country is looking for an NIL handout, is what I was told by some. So, you know, a little bit of sarcasm there. Let's get to this next one. Colin McCann with a comment. He says, makes me so hyped checking out the recruiting rankings and seeing Notre Dame in the number one spot. Despite all the NIL talk, facilities crap, academic excuses, nutritionist BS, this, that, and the other. Colin, I think you nailed it. I think you nailed it. I mean, look, are those things important things for Notre Dame to continue to improve upon? Yes. The point is those things aren't necessarily, especially the first two, aren't deal breakers for every kid in the country. Some are. We talk about receiver, and we could point to a guy for sure that's a big issue for. But there are a lot of kids out there that kids, especially today, are a lot more savvy and aware of the opportunities in front of them, Ryan, than used to be there.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big thing why they're still able to continue go out and get these top kids and continue to fill out the class with really, really good football players.
Yep. I love how Callan kind of just put everything out there too, right? Like, it's not even just, you know, excuses all the way around. Like, he hit every single thing that you've ever heard about Notre Dame as far as like why they can't land some players. It's just really funny to think about.
Yeah, it's amazing how it just all of a sudden changed just like that. And then the excuse out of some places will be, well, you know, they clearly lowered the academic standards. I can assure you with 100% certainty that Marcus Freeman has not been given exceptions to get players that didn't already exist. So that's a fallacy. Jay is fired up. He says, add Jason Moore, Devin Houston, and Samuel Mpemba, and the gap is closed. For this particular class, I would agree. The key, however, to truly close the gap is you've got to string these together, right? 2022, really good D-line class on the edge. They were a guy way up the middle, right, from really being there. This class, home run. The two together, home run. And then now it's about, okay, finish this class and then get to 2024 and do the same thing next year. Mm-hmm. That's obviously going to be the key because that's what Bama does. That's what Georgia does. I mean, you talk about Georgia's defensive line class. I mean, how many of those kids are going to go in the first two, three rounds of this draft? And it would have been another if Adam Anderson wasn't accused of the horrible – well, actually not accused, indicted. Trial for a pretty horrible thing. I mean, but that's the key. It's not just one class or a couple guys here and there. That's what, and this is what we talked about. We had a thing on the message board, Ryan, and it was like, where's Notre Dame got the gap closed right now? And I said, D-line, it's not. Like, I think this is going to be a great D-line, but the problem is if Isaiah Foskey goes down, there's a big drop-off between him and the next guy. Mm-hmm. Where if Williams goes down to Bama, you just slide Dallas Turner right into that position or slide in Keanu Code into that position or slide, you know what I mean? Now, those guys won't be as good as him, but they're still going to be really good. And that's the thing. That's where Notre Dame has got to get to. That's why the consistency of recruiting elite classes is important.
Well, I mean, you just mentioned Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. I mean, they just chased off Drew Sanders, who's a pretty good player too, right? Like it's that ridiculous right now. And you're right. They have to get to there. Brian, I'm just imagining a vision though. Devin Houston, Jason Moore on the inside, slanting, Drake Bowen, blitzing an A-gap. Defensive end, Keon Keeley coming inside on a stunt. Oh, man, just a lot of length, a lot of explosiveness.
With Jalen Snead out at Rover, Junior 2 Alamaka coming at Mike.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, when Keon taps out, it's, hey, Aiden Gobira, you know, hey, Josh Burnham, you know, I mean, it's really been impressive what they've been able to do so far. I mean, it's been really, really impressive. Let's see if we got any more questions here. We got a super chat from Ryan Feeks. Really enjoy all the analysis from the IB crew. How long do you see this staff sticking together? Who might be the most likely to move on first?
That's a good question. First of all, great first name. Great first name. Mm-hmm. I would say that, Ryan. I mean, it's going to be tough, right? I mean, there's a lot of younger coaches who we know that have other aspirations, right? To keep moving up, and whether that is on the college side, whether it's on the NFL side. So, I mean, I think it's unrealistic to think that this is going to be a multi-year type of, you know, staff that you're going to keep together. But I don't want to rush to think about it, to be honest with you. I mean, who's going to be the first guy? It's speculation.
Had irresponsible of us to do that, because then people could take that and say, hey, there's rumors that so-and-so is going. But here's the deal. Name me the last time Alabama brought back the same coaching staff for more than 1 or 2 years in a row.
Right. I mean, just look at their offensive coordinator string, right? Like, I mean, you went from what, Lane Kiffin, and
then they have something Stark like offensive coordinators in a 9-10 year span,
probably.
Because you had McElwain, Nussmeier, mm-hmm. you had
Lane Kiffin was there, yeah.
Dabble, mm-hmm. Mike Locksley, Steve Sarkisian, and now Bill O'Brien.
Yep.
I mean, that's. And yet they keep winning. And I think they won a championship with five different guys. So,
you know,
the point is, though, is if they lose a guy, this is why the head coach is so important.
Mm-hmm.
When Notre Dame lost Harry Hiestand, I didn't have faith that the head coach was going to replace him with a similar person. And that's been a problem. And Marcus Freeman has shown, hey, there's a standard. If so-and-so leaves to become a head coach or a coordinator, that's a good thing for our program, because our coaches are just like, we want to develop our players to go achieve their dreams in the professional leagues. We also want to do the same thing with coaches, right? If Harry Hiestand wants to be a lifer on the O-line, then let's keep you for life. But other guys have aspirations of being coordinators or being head coaches. You want to build them and help them get that, because here's what happens. When you have that success, then the next guy is going to say, hey, look, did you see what happened? We're talking D-line, so let's use Al Washington, because I brought him up the other day. I'll be shocked if in the next 5 years Al Washington is in the head coach somewhere, right? But if that happens, then there's going to be plenty of D-line coaches. They're going to look at Notre Dame and say they're going to have three very strong feelings. Number one, they're going to say exactly what Al Golden said. I want to work with Marcus Freeman. Number two, the guy that I'm replacing just got a head coaching job. Number three, that dude left me dudes, right? That's why Bama will get great coaches every year, even though they know they don't like working with Nick Saban, because they know the opportunities that are presented if they do that. And so that losing coaches in this, as long as you have a head coach that you trust to go out there and continue to bring in other guys like-minded, then losing coaches isn't necessarily a bad thing. The problem is Brian Kelly didn't often do that. He had a nice string of defensive coordinators. I'll give him that, with Elko and then Clark and then Marcus Freeman. He did a nice job there, but especially on the offensive side of the ball, we didn't see that play out nearly as much as it should have. Mitchell Coney says, love seeing the staff put excuses to bed about Notre Dame not being able to recruit. Do you think this will be the best class in the country?
Oh, he said Notre Dame history, right?
Yes.
I just saw that.
Let's take it twofold. Let's go best class in the country. Best class in history? I can't go there.
Yeah, I don't have enough historical context to even comment on it, to be honest.
I'll say this. I would say let's look at it from the beginning of the what we call the Rivals era. Right, because Rivals really launched the recruiting rankings and all that kind of stuff. That was 2002. Does this class have a chance to be the best that Notre Dame has landed in that era? Absolutely. You got to get Dante Moore. The O-line class got to fill out. You got to get Jaden Greathouse. You've got to get Rodney Gallagher. I mean, you've got to get Jason Moore and Devin Houston. You've got to get, you know, one of the linebackers. You've got to meet your needs at corner. But, yeah, it's got a shot to be that. Best in history, I can't give you that kind of context. And when I look at Notre Dame's 1990 class, I still have a hard time looking at that and being like anything other than, like, I got something right here. Let me
let me try to find this here real quick. Give you some of the names from that group. All right. So let me try to go find this roster. Let me give you some guys that were part of that class. Okay, because it's absurd. Like the 1990 class was absurd.
1990
class. Yeah, because what Loose, and the reason I bring up 1990 is because that's the class that Loose Emoji told me was the best class of sort of the modern era. There was a class, I think his best class of all time is the Ross Browner class of 73, but I couldn't possibly tell you. Like
I have the 1990 class in front of me. If you want me to read some names,
yeah, because I know it's like Aaron Taylor, Bryant Young.
Quarterback Kevin McDougal. We got Jerome Bettis was in that class. Jeff Burris was a tailback recruit in that class. Oscar McBride, a tight end. Aaron Taylor, Bryant Young, Jim Flanagan, Brian Hamilton, Tom Carter.
A first-round pick who now has a doctorate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just listed a class with three College Football Hall of Famers in it.
Yep.
And that doesn't include the first-round picks like Jeff Burris and Tom Carter and, you know, guys like that. But you just listed three College Football Hall of Famers.
Yeah, so, I'm looking at an article now that has them as that as the number two class in Notre Dame's
history. Is that from Loose Emoji?
That might. No, it's not.
It's not. Okay.
Nope.
Where's it from?
It looks like it's a Bleacher Report article from Matt Matera.
Yeah, he stole it from Lou. I think Lou's, because I actually have Lou's list of all-time classes, all-time classes, and I believe his number one class is it's actually the 1946 class.
Yeah, it's the same list then, because he has 46 as number one.
Then he stole Lou's rankings, douche. It's Emile Sitko, Leon Hart. I mean, a bunch of guys I've never heard of. George Connor, you know, Ralph. I mean, there's a lot of guys I've never heard of, but like Leon Hart won a Heisman Trophy, you know, and Lou breaks it down. But I believe he had the 1990 as number two. Let me pull this up here real quick. Yeah, he had 1990 as number two. On top of some of the names that you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. You also had Dean Lytle, who was a freak. Lake Dawson, Clint Johnson, Tim Ruddy was part of that class. Oliver Gibson, Pete Bursich, Greg Lane, John Covington, and Willie Clark. Here's what Lou had wrote. Among the 21 players – Among the 21 players who stayed, 14 played in the NFL. A school record, 5 players in this class were drafted in the first round. That's – wow. Yeah. The previous high was 4 from 1963 that included Alan Page, Kevin Hardy, Paul Seiler, and Tom Regner. And so he said, on top of the 5 first-round picks, it also had Tim Ruddy was a second-round pick, Willie Clark, Lake Dawson, Jim Flanagan were third-round picks, and Oliver Gibson was a fourth-round pick. So, yeah, that's a pretty good class, I would say. So it's hard for me to say that this class is in that level. But of the modern era of 2002 to now, it has a chance to be there. Right. It has a chance to be there. And the reason that I say that, Ryan, is because I can't compare what these guys are as high school players to those guys, because I don't know what kind of high school players those guys were. I only know what kind of college players they were. And I can't predict that this class is going to have 5 future first round picks. That'd be quite a prediction. I mean, there's guys with the 5-star upsides. You know, I can't predict that there's going to be 3 Hall of Famers from this class, you know, because when Lou wrote that article, I think 2 of them weren't Hall of Famers yet. So maybe 3 of them were Hall of Famers. And then, of course, BY just got elected into the NFL Hall of Fame, which is quite impressive. Matt, 2011 GT. Haven't seen you, Matt. So it's good to see you with Super Chat. If we continue to recruit at this level, it doesn't matter who leaves. There will be coaches that will be successful at Notre Dame. Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on, right? Ryan? Yep. I mean, that's the whole point. Yeah.
That's kind of what you highlighted, right? Like, that's the trajectory you want.
Right. Kuba says, is Marcus Freeman's Brian Kelly's best recruit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Swift yes. Yep.
Yeah. 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 DC Irish has a question. Was Lewis Nixon that 2011 class as well? No, Lewis was a 2010 recruit. Lewis's recruitment was really interesting because he actually committed to Notre Dame when they did not have a head coach. Ryan, I don't know if you know the story on this one, but Lewis committed because they had kept some of the staff on to kind of keep recruiting till the new coach was hired. One of those coaches, smartly, was Tony Alford.
Well, Tony was Notre Dame's Florida recruiter at the time because they were still a regional recruiting staff back then, right? And Tony recruited Florida. And so he kept recruiting Lewis. And Lewis actually committed to Notre Dame before Brian Kelly was hired, after Charlie Weiss was fired. And so, yeah, that's an impressive deal. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. So I see Ryan here. If there's any more questions to get to here before we get going.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Hader says, would Mpemba be a take if you still get those other 5D linemen? The answer is yes, Ryan, because they're not recruiting Samuel Mpemba as a defensive lineman.
Yeah, no, they're recruiting Mpemba to be as a rover right now. And I think that his next trajectory would probably be Will. I mean, he could eventually maybe grow into a Viper. It's possible, but rover is the initial spot.
I think they try him at Mike or Will before they would try him at Viper. And I could even see him growing into a big end, but yeah, they're gonna try to give him a chance to play off the ball first if they were to get him.
Yep,
we'll see if they do or don't. But look, the other part is Alex Rohan said this too. I would take Mpemba no matter what, right? And I think that's pretty spot on.
Get long and athletic kids and figure out where they fit. Yes, 100%.
You don't say no to a kid like that.
Exactly. I don't care if he ends up at tight ends.
You're right.
Samuel Mpemba wants to come.
That's another point. You could put him at tight end. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. Let me see here if we got any more before we get out of here. We got a ton of comments, ton of questions. So I just want to make sure we don't miss any of these. I'm just trying to get to see if we have any more questions, Ryan. So just give me a second here.
Yep.
So this does figure that all this happens during draft week.
I know.
Yep. Hey, Michael, man, I need you to stop posting like stuff that comes from like troll Twitter sites. All right. Like just please don't do that. Right. Please don't do that. Love you, man. But just no. Everybody's talking about
Arch Manning.
Right, because Eli's on campus.
Right.
And, you know, some account that's been known to just make stuff up in the past. It has to do with Arch. It has nothing to do with Arch. He's like, from my understanding, he's filming some kind of commercial, right? It has nothing to do with Arch Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
I like this comment. I got to put this up real quick. I gave Mpemba a shot at quarterback if he wanted to come and wanted to try it. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like kids like that, Ryan, you ring them in and you figure it out. And that's what Saban has done for years. Like, do they really need that guy? No, you know, but so what, you know? And I think that's let manager one says, Brian, what do you think is the max defensive commits this class can take? So I say D line 5, right, Ryan?
Yep.
Linebacker 3.
Mm-hmm.
Cornerback 2. Safety 2. And then I think there's one more. There's room for one more DB, depending on who it is. You know, you can take a third corner or a third safety, which then gets you to
13. Yeah.
Right. I think that's about where you would go. I think there's a chance they. And look, here's the deal. If they get, let's say they get Morton Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say they get Jaden Osbury. They get two corners. It's just for argument's sake, it's Micah Bell and Christian Gray, just for argument's sake. And then let's say they get one more DB, right, whoever it is. If all of a sudden Samuel Mpemba still wanted to come, I think they'd figure it out, right? Or if Mpemba committed or Darren Gillette committed and then Jaden Osbury wanted to come later, I think they'd figure it out. I think they'd find a way to figure it out. I think that's the thing I like about this staff is they're like, look, we'll figure it out, especially in this era of kids committing, you know, or kids being able to kind of transfer out, Ryan, without sitting out. You're going to see more kids that go out like that. I do want to bring this up, Ryan, because this has been asked about on the board, so I want to give you a chance to address it. Because you were, I think, in the middle of your interview stretch when this question got placed on the board, and it was like during our show. DM ND13, are you guys familiar with Owen Waffle? I don't know if that's how you say his name. Mm-hmm. The 2024 D-line recruit from Jersey, and if so, what are your thoughts? The reason is there was a crystal ball for him today.
Yep.
So, Ryan, why don't you explain that's
Yeah, so, I mean, I mean, so yeah, obviously I have done a story on Owen in the past because he has visited Notre Dame before and he's a New Jersey guy anyway. So I just know the name from that instance as well. I checked in with him after the crystal ball was put out. He's not in commit mode. He's not right. near commit mode. Right. So
and
I mean,
that's
he likes
why we
Notre
checked
Dame
out too, is because it was right. like, wait a minute, that's not the vibe he'd given you in the past. So
right. Yeah. He said there's not a timeline on anything right now. He's just enjoying, like, he right now, basically he's been talking to the staff recently just about what do I need to improve on? What are things that you need? Like, kind of just feedback from his own personal game. So there's no timeline on Owen Waffle right now.
And in Tom's defense, because I've had some people call me like, you know, why is he putting that out if the kid's not committing? And I'm like, because crystal balls aren't meant to be this kid's about to commit, right? That happens. But it's more about because they put it out way in advance because, like, this is as of right now, this is how I feel. And if I change my mind, I can change my mind. Like, he had Notre Dame crystal ball for Cardinal Tate, changed it to Ohio State because that's what the new that's what the evidence was trending to, right? So, in Tom's defense, because a couple of people were a little frustrated by it, crystal balls aren't meant to just be, okay, I'm predicting this is going to happen next week.
Commit right? watch,
it,
right?
Right. Yeah. It's okay, right now, I feel comfortable that this team is the clear leader. I don't necessarily say if I would disagree with that, but I think what it's turned into, and this is their own fault. This isn't Tom's fault. This is that organization's fault because they allow people when a kid's about to commit, 30 people that know nothing about his recruitment can put in crystal balls for the kid. And so you get all these people like 90% whatevers, right? And but the way it works too is I believe if you the further out you put it, the more points you get or whatever. And so that's why people do this stuff. So it's turned into, oh, gee, crystal ball, kid's about to commit, but that wasn't necessarily the intent of it. The only intent of it is kind of my point. So I did want to address that here real quick. Here's one from Matt Kustra. Which teams do you see jumping Notre Dame in the 23 recruiting rankings? Notre Dame in the top five.
I mean,
that's a little bit of a downer. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
shocked. Let me say something seriousness, Ryan. I'll let you answer it. I will be flat out shocked, floored, if Notre Dame doesn't finish with a top five class.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to be a top. I mean, I would be a little surprised if they don't have a top three class if they close on a couple of the people that we think they will, right? So,
right.
I mean, yeah, it's a very pessimistic look, obviously, Matt, right? I mean, obviously, teams like Alabama are going to be in the final rankings, right? Like, they're going to get their commits late like they always do. Georgia, I'm sure, will be in the conversation. Texas A&M, like, there's going to be those types of schools. But, I mean, I think Notre Dame has a legit shot to compete in that conversation, right? Like, I think they can compete to have the number one class in the country. So, let's be optimistic right now. I mean, just got a big commitment.
Big commitment, and you're talking about, if you look at, in all seriousness, too, I think here's another thing, because there was times last year, and there was a time in the 2021 class, I think last year's class was ranked number one at one point. It's definitely ranked number two at one point. But I know for a fact that the 2021 class was ranked number one for a while. Cause like some of their early commitments was like Blake Fisher, Tyler Buckner, Lorenzo Styles, and Deion Colsey all committed like super early, like as sophomores. And so they were up high. Or actually, fall of their junior seasons, right? So early. And they got into a situation where it was kind of like all their best players were committed early. I mean, it was like you weren't going to fill out the rest of that class. Well, in this class is a little different because, number one, the 11 that they have, yes, it's early, but we're talking about impact players. So of the 11 commits in the class, Ryan, let me see here. Cooper Flanagan, Braylon James, Keon Keeley, Brendan Vernon, Bubakar, Drake Bowen, Peyton Bowen. Seven of the 11 either are currently ranked in the top 100 by at least one service or were. Cooper Flanagan was, but he fell out. He's like 108 now. Like seven of your 11 kids are top 100 recruits. Like, that's high volume. But the bigger thing is you're in a situation now where when you look at the quality of the recruit that we think they're going to continue to add, it's of a much higher caliber than what they've added, where in the past they would kind of load up on their best kids early and then try to hold on.
Right.
This class to me has a little bit of a different feel to it. And I'm actually, Ryan, if you want to touch that one, because I'm actually trying to look up some, I'm actually doing the class calculator right now of what I, as of right now, what we think the class is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to see here for a second what that score would look like. So
it's the simple fact that it's all the big fish are not out of the pond yet, right? Like right. Notre Dame's still in a good position with Dante Moore, quarterback out of Michigan. They're still in a good spot with Charles Jagusa, offensive lineman out of Illinois. They're trending in the right direction with guys like Jaden Osbury, hopefully. You know, they've always taken a couple nice steps. He's coming back on campus next month, which is huge for Notre Dame. Sorry, May, June. Yeah, 2 months from now. But yeah, either way, they're in a good spot there. Jaden Greathouse, wide receiver out of Texas, it's trending well there. Rodney Gallagher, they just hit it out of the park with the recent visit. So this is not they loaded up on everybody. Now we're just getting some depth pieces to this class, right? Like there are headliners that still have yet to make decisions, and Notre Dame is in a good spot with everybody that I just named. So Notre Dame needs to close, but this is definitely not a situation where they loaded up on their big fish and now they're just, you know, they're fishing for guppies, right? Like right. They have some big dudes that are left on the board.
If you look at what I project to be their class, I did not include Samson Okolola. I did not include Caleb Downs. I did not include a fifth DB, and I did not include Samuel Mpemba. I took one of the lower ranked linebackers. This class would finish fourth last year in what was an absurd year with a couple of those classes. It would have finished third in 2021 based on what those numbers are. Would have finished second in 2020 and second in 2019, third in 2018. I mean, so you're picking up the pattern here. Third in 2017. So, like, you're talking about a surefire top three class. And that's with me not even giving them everything I think they're going to get. It didn't include a fifth offensive lineman. It didn't include, like, some guys that would, like, if you get a fifth offensive lineman, all of a sudden that sucker jumps up a little bit. Now we're talking about, like, let's just say they get a fifth offensive lineman. Let's just say, for argument's sake, I'm not going to say who the other guys. Let's say they get a fifth offensive lineman that I know is a good player but not, like, considered, like, a top player. And let's say that I'm wrong and they get one of those big time highly ranked defensive players I didn't include. Now all of a sudden that class jumps up even higher. You're talking about ranks first or second in some of those years. So that's a huge deal. So there's no doubt. Kay Grant with a super sticker. Appreciate that very, very much. I hope it sounds like you kind of got that figured it out. So big day, Ryan, right? I mean, big day.
Yeah. Right? We didn't think we were going to do two shows today, but here we are. Mm-hmm. It's a big day. Anytime we do two shows, you know, it's a good day.
Yeah. So there you go. So anyway, we did our Wednesday night recruiting show, Ryan. So we'll get back to that when the draft is over and sprint out, the spring is over and all that kind of stuff. So appreciate everybody. But there was one more comment that I wanted to bring up because it was just so perfect to end the show. So since my man Ace K hasn't given me his closing yet, God Country Notre Dame and Irish Breakdown. Great, great name, by the way. Smash the like button. Gap is closing. BK left his card out in the parking lot years ago and never made it into the store. Freeman smashed through the doors first day. So I just had to get that in there. That was brilliant. I appreciate that. And I love the name very, very much. Hey, hit that like button, everybody. Hit the subscribe button. Here we go. For Ryan's keeps per purchase. So thank you for that, Matt. Hit that like button, hit subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, join the message board, everybody. We have so much going on. You'd have had a little bit of a heads up that this was coming. Little bit, not too much earlier, but lots of great discussion, lots of great intel, a lot of great stuff going on. But if you can't or if you don't want to join the message board, keep doing what you're doing. Keep watching our show, share the podcast, all those kind of things. What he's going to do is he's going to be on the show. That's what he's going to do, man. Ryan's locked in, folks, right? Oh, he's locked in. He's going to be like Mel Kiper. No, he's going to be like, who's the dude that's like, oh, not Adam Schefter, the other guy like him, but you're in the middle of showing, like
Ian Rappaport.
There you go. And he's like on his phone, like, you know, texting stuff about the draft while he's doing a show. That's what he's going to be doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, rule number 76, no excuses, right? Play like a champion. So that's how it's going to be. So he'll be on the show. There's no doubt about it, but we're going to make some phone calls tonight. We're going to call all the Notre Dame recruits and let them know, like, listen, no commitments for the next 3 days. Ryan's locked into the draft. So if y'all could just hold on until the 1st of May, we're obviously kidding. So anyway, everybody, thanks for being with us today. Two great audiences, tons of great questions, tons of great comments. We appreciate all of you guys. Thank you all so, so, so very much for being a part of the Irish Breakdown podcast.